Continued. Rest assured that, by my mercy, neither your advancement in Krishna consciousness nor your remembrance will ever be impeded, even at the time of creation or annihilation. Thus you will attain my association in the spiritual world after giving up this deplorable material world. 23 and 24. Srila Prabhupada explains, devotional service rendered to the personality of Godhead never goes in vain. Since the personality of God is eternal, intelligence applied in his service or anything done in his relation is also permanent. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said that such transcendental service rendered under the personality of Godhead accumulates birth after birth. And when the devotee is fully matured, the total service counted together makes him eligible to enter into the association of the personality of Godhead. Such accumulation of God's service is never vanquished, but increases till fully mature. Narad Muni continued, after the Lord stopped speaking, I felt profound gratitude, and so I bowed my head to offer my obeisances unto him. Thereafter I began wandering all over the earth, fully satisfied, humble, and non-envious. While ignoring all kinds of social conventions, I continually chanted the holy name and glories of the Supreme Lord. So, one is fully satisfied, right, which can only be done in devotional service. Then, one is non-envious, because there's nothing to gain. Right? You only get envious if someone has something you want. Right? If someone doesn't have anything you want, what's there to be envious of? Right? And humble, because we are not the, you know, we're not the body, we're not the conditioning, because that's all we're dealing with here. Because anything we become proud of is that. We're not becoming proud of something else. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Is he kind of in a avadut mood, since we're saying all kinds of social...
Yes, it means all kinds of... It means here, it doesn't mean that he's doing things that are necessarily crazy. It just means that he's not necessarily following, you know, dress codes or, you know, being social or all those things. He may just, you know, he's walking down the road, there's a crowd, he may just keep walking. He doesn't stop to say hello or things like that. He's just absorbed. If there's an opportunity, of course, for Krishna consciousness, that will be taken advantage of. But if not, then there's nothing to gain here.
Right? So he's not preaching?
He may be, but the point is it's so many social conventions are there. Because now, what does that mean, social conventions? We're dealing here with the Vedic culture, right? So then in the Vedic culture, there's so many different rules and stuff, you know, families and communities and different duties that people have. So those he doesn't necessarily have to involve himself in, right? But when it's coming from a, you know, it doesn't mean he jaywalks or something, you know, not following the rules, right? You run across in the middle of the street or something like that. You know what I'm saying? It means that those duties and the mode of goodness that are expected for someone involved in the material phenomena, then he's not following those. Mm. Like that. Yeah.
So this all happened as a result of a Lord's darshan. Then he got even
Yes, then even more, because we see he was basically self-satisfied before, but he had that hankering to, you know, see the Lord and that, and the experiences of that, you know. So your earlier stages of Baba. So now it's like he's getting into these more mature stages, you know, self-satisfied. Not he's just absorbed in chanting and everything. And then in this way, he's just moving around. I mean, it's the detail, because in here, why only this much? Maybe he's preaching, maybe he's not, maybe, you know, because for the Avadhut, it's not essential that he preaches. If someone comes and asks, like Sukadeva is just wandering because all those people who are following him aren't interested in Krishna consciousness, right? So it's like, so he's not direct. But when asked, then he interacts like that. So, but that's not an essential part of the story. Even if he was doing, it may come up in another place. That's the thing about the Puranas. That's why they're individual books, but at the same time, it's one book. Right? It's the Purana. Because different aspects will be brought out in the different Puranas. Because like in here, he's establishing the point that satisfaction is only in connection to the Lord. Like that. So therefore the elements of how he's preaching, what his sadhana was, these aren't actually essential for the story. So he's not getting into those details. But just the aspect of how by the association of the advanced souls and by absorbing oneself in the Lord, that's the only way of satisfaction. Because he's already presented all the rules, all the everything that there is to do in the Mahabharata. But he's not satisfied. You know, because the mechanics won't make you satisfied. Yes. It's the your attitude, what your goal is. Right? So like that. So then the story will go in this way, in a simple way. So it's not mentioned whether he's preaching or not. He could be, he might not be, because it's mentioned in the purports that he has no need to go to the grihastha's houses, but he goes. One may go for preaching. He's just giving the generic of the Privrajakacharya. But he's not specifically stating that that's what Narad Muni is doing. But we can tell by that it's inferred. So he may be, he may not. If the opportunity arises, he does. Because at this time, you know, it would appear he's not functioning within a particular mission. Right? Because missions basically are happening in the Kali Yuga. That sounds strange.
Yeah.
The other ages, it's just the paramparas there, and individuals. They follow, they do things, they take up the association, because following the Vedic culture is a pretty prominent element. You know, so therefore, you know, they invite sadhus, they always, you know, it's like Prabhupada's father, he was always inviting every day to lunch four sadhus. Mm. Like that. So, you know, it's a standard thing that one invites, one has programs, one does all these things, there's satsangs. So it's going on nicely. But in the Kali Yuga, then as we see Advaitacharya's, what he saw was nobody's interested. And you know, everybody's already too busy doing so many other very important things. You know? And so, therefore, in the Kali Yuga, you see these missions are established. And that's why the significance of the founder Acharya, right? This is not the founder meaning the head of the Sampradaya. That's a different thing. This means that the founder Acharya, because he sets up a mission that will work in the time frame that he is preaching in. Like that. You know, so it's what Prabhupada's established. It will work for 10,000 years, despite what modern man says. It will work for 10,000 years. Just like Ramanujacharya's things are still working now. A little less. But, you know, his time frame is there. When Lord Chaitanya's mission comes up, then naturally, then the things that they're looking for in their mission that may be some shortage now in applying the mission, they'll find in this. You know what I'm saying? They can still follow theirs and do, just like I mentioned, is that one of the more successful of the eight Madhva acharyas, then they have, you know, have a bus and, you know, painted on the side, you know, whatever it's painted, you know, their mat, and they go out and go to the villages and preach, and they do what we do, because in that mat, the junior Swami, he wanted to learn English, to preach in English, and so he did it by studying Prabhupada's Gita. and having learned, then he went out to preach. He went to America, was preaching and everything. But when he came back, then they considered, now he's been contaminated because he went across the ocean. His point was, what do you mean I went preaching for Madhvacharya? You know, so where's the contamination? So he went back to America, and I think they found a new junior Swami, but that mud, you know, preaches. It goes out. You know, so they it's, but these things are gained from here. You know, what we're saying is that Bodayan Maharaj was saying a few, I think, disappearance day programs before, that the method of preaching in the world, in the West, then anybody in the Gaudiya Math who's successful, he'd got it from Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. Like that. He was saying is that, you know, so, you know, honoring his prasad, we are able to preach because he worked out how it should be done. So he says, so this is the meaning of the founder of Chari. He establishes the method for using, like that. And anybody uses it, it'll work, like that. So it's specific for Kali Yuga, and that's why the founder is very special. And that's why one doesn't have to worry, because the founder's there, right? The Madhvas, their strength is the instruction of Madhvacharya. The Shri's strength is the instructions of Ramanuja. So our strength is the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. Like that. So one doesn't have to get into all this trip of, you know exactly how advanced is the specific spiritual master, and that was this much or that much, and, you know, like this. But it's Tuesday, does it change? You know, all this stuff we don't have to worry about. Because as long as they're giving you relevant instruction based on what Prabhupada's saying, you know, in other words, showing you how to apply Prabhupada's instructions in your life, it works. So that's the mission. So those are established in Kali Yuga. So each Sampradaya has one, and, you know, Lord Chaitanya has one, and, you know, Shankara has one. You know, so everybody's covered. All the six schools of Vedanta have their mission. Is that okay? Yes, so here's, one doesn't have to organize in that way. Individuals may organize in their area and things like that. But in this form, with the founder, one, it's not necessary.
It's organized by the founder.
No. I'm saying in Kali Yuga it is. But I'm saying in these other ages, like Narad Muni, it's not necessary like that. Because the culture itself is already designed to do that. So if there's people who understand that, they'll do that. And people who don't, won't. You know, as Narad Muni pointed out, is preach to that higher class, you know, higher class meaning those interested in Krishna consciousness, right? That was Madhvacharya's rule of gradation. So the higher grade means it's because of their Krishna conscious, like that. So you preach to them and they will take it. You know, the general mass may not take it, but you don't worry about that. You worry about, you preach in the mass, but you worry about those who take it. Right? In other words, you preach to everybody, but you cultivate those that come forward. Like that. Okay. Thereafter, I began wandering over the earth, fully satisfied, humble, and non-envious. While ignoring all kinds of social conventions, I continually chanted the holy name and glories of the Supreme Lord. Thus, while fully absorbed in thinking of Lord Krishna, in due course of time, after having become free from all taints and material attachment, I met with death. Right? So taints here, we understand these are very subtle. These are what's discussed as the fragrance left in the box after the hing is not in the box. You know, it's just the fragrance left over from having been in the material world. Yeah. Like that. That makes sense?
Yeah.
You know, you walk by the...
Yeah.
It's in the material world.
It's funky.
Yeah. Okay, so after becoming free from all taints and material attachment, I met with death. Instantaneously, I received a transcendental form that was befitting an associate of the Lord, just as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. So that's the thing, one leaves and one's there. So that's that the devotees, they're working on a different system. I mean, it's a conditioned souls, then the Amadutas come and pick them up, regardless. So you're pious or impious. You're pious, they're nice to you. You're not pious, they're not nice. You know, it's simple. You know, like the prison guards are nice to the warden, not nice to the prisoners. It's just, you know, it's how they work. Right? So then, and then you go to see Yamaraj, it's decided what's happening, and then all these arrangements. So generally, you know, there's that distance between leaving one body and being born in the next. But here, then it's simultaneous, it's instantaneous. You leave here, you're there. Yeah. I think there's one where Prabhupada was saying, he was sitting there, and, you know, like you go and then, ha! You know, wake up, you're in the spiritual world.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yes.
In what circumstances do the Vishnu Dutas, or like in Santa Tukaram's story, like Garuda comes in his chariot and, you know, whisks the soul away?
But Tukaram, because he was a devotee, he was an advanced devotee, so then, you know, Garuda came. Uh-huh. But that's not a regular thing. Yamadutas are for those who are not doing devotional service. Those who have taken up devotional service, the Yamadutas don't bother them.
And like with the Jamila and the Vishnu Dutas?
He hadn't really taken up devotional service. He remembered the Lord, but wasn't committed to devotional service. But the point was, is Yamaraj pointed out that having done some devotional service, then they're not supposed to come and collect him. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that. So therefore, then he just took his next birth. So he didn't have to go through that whole. And so it's just arranged. The Lord sanctions, Maya arranges it. But you don't have to go through the court of Yamaraj. Right? So that's why I think there's that verse, you know, about seeing Yamaraj's court even in dreams. You know, so the devotee, it's a different system. But going back to Godhead, it's instantaneous. Right? The other, then you have to, you know, be in the womb and sit there for a while twiddling your thumbs. Then you have to wait for fingers to be able to do that. It takes a while. Yeah.
So it's even if the devotee has to take another verse, they skip Yamaraj's
verse? Yeah, of course. They always do.
Right,
but why the Pandavas have to see the hell in the Mahabharata situation?
Was it a problem seeing hell? Or you've never visited the West? You're a devotee, so what's the problem?
Regarding this point that the pious...
Was there Yamaraj? Was there, you know, you understand? You're inferring all that. You know, the point is it was, what's the point to be gained there, in that story? No, but don't, means you should be thinking about it. It's not a matter of well, I'm asking you, but the point is you thought about it and came up with the question, so why can't you continue thinking about it? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, the point is, here is these five brothers, and so then they would rather be together, right, than in different places because they can get better facility. Yeah? Like that. So, therefore, that element of whatever is the association, that's more important. You know? So the association of devotees is more important than the location you're in. So if you have good association, you don't worry about where you are. If you don't have good association, then you change locations. Does that make sense? That's the thing. Plus, Mahabharata picks those particular aspects of the story. You know, it doesn't. It mentions about Narayana Rishi, but it doesn't really get into too much detail about Arjuna's position, right? Because Vyasadeva was worried that if he gets too much into all those details, then the common person will lose interest. Right? So, he succeeded exactly what he wanted to do. He succeeded. Everybody likes Mahabharata. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so, but at the same time, as pure devotional service is not the, you know, first thought that comes into mind when people talk about Mahabharata. Right, so therefore he used those stories that you can get some kind of a general, you know, religious understanding from, right? And he'll hint at devotional service. Yes.
What does it mean, the total service counted together?
The total service means whatever you've done from the very beginning up to, you know, the time of here leaving the body.
So is it about quantity?
No, what he's meaning is that it's not that anything you've done is lost. It's eternal, so therefore it's always building maturity. Because everything done is building on the previous, so it's always developing. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada describes the mood, activities, and destination of a sincere devotee. The life of a sincere devotee of the Lord is thus explained in a nutshell by Narada. Narada Muni, by his personal example. Such a devotee, after his initiation by the Lord, or his bona fide representative, takes very seriously chanting of the glories of the Lord, and traveling all over the world so that others may also hear the glories of the Lord. Interesting to note here. Such a devotee after his initiation by the Lord or his bona fide representative. So the point is that the bona fide, the spiritual master is representing the Lord. So much of the time we may forget that and think it's all about the individual themselves and what is the quality of the individual. Mm-hmm. The point is the quality of the individual is that they're trying to help you connect to Krishna.
Yes.
Because Krishna is the guru. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that makes sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And traveling all over the world so that others may also hear the glories of the Lord. So here he's making the point that the preaching is going on. Such devotees have no desire for material gain. They are conducted by one single desire, to go back to Godhead. This awaits them in due course on quitting the material body. Because they have the highest aim of life, going back to Godhead, they are never envious of anyone, nor are they proud of being eligible to go back to Godhead. Right? So he's even putting the pride into the spiritual. Not even just on, because the material is just not even a consideration. It's on the spiritual, then it's that. You're okay there, or you want to? Okay. Okay. Their only business is to chant and remember the holy name, fame, and pastimes of the Lord, and, according to personal capacity, to distribute the message to others, for others' welfare, without motive or material gain. So then here's, you know, according to personal capacity. Because certain conditionings, they may have some certain natural abilities. So just whatever those abilities, those areas, that's where it'll work. Does that make sense? To be fully absorbed in the thought of Krishna means clearance of material dirts or hankerings. As a very rich man has no hankerings for small petty things, so also a devotee of Lord Krishna, who is guaranteed to pass on to the kingdom of God, where life is eternal, fully cognizant and blissful, naturally has no hankerings for petty material things, which are like dolls or shadows of the reality, and are without permanent value. That is the sign of spiritually enriched person. And in the due course of time, when a pure devotee is completely prepared, all of a sudden the change of body occurs, which is commonly called death. Right? It means that we call it death, but what's happening is it's just switching to the... But he says simultaneous. And for the pure devotee, such a change takes place exactly like lightning and illumination follows simultaneously. That is to say, a devotee simultaneously changes his material body and develops the spiritual body by the will of the Supreme. Even before death, the pure devotee has no material affection, due to his body's being spiritualized like a red-hot iron in contact with fire. Right? As you mentioned, this is always used because this is how one is spiritual. Right? Spiritual is because one is in contact with transcendence. This is a very major, major, major problem in world religions. How the definition of spiritual, of absolute, right? Because of not being able to define this, right? But it's very simple. Iron's in fire, right? Now, if you want to complain that it's iron, but it acts like fire, so what's the complaint? And if it's out of the fire and it is acting like iron, what's the surprise? Oh, he never was a pure devotee because now he's acting like this. What do you mean? That just means he's out of the fire. Because when he's in the fire, then you act like fire.
Yes.
You understand? So it just resolves everything very easily.
Yes.
Like that. You don't need, 2,000 years of argumentation to still not know what you're talking about.
Still not know.
Right? You understand? It's really simple. That's why this is used. Otherwise, we always tend to use this total immaculate kind of thing. That's where we run into problems.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that make sense? Because
yes.
It's not about the conditioning of the living entity. It's about the intent of the living entity. Because one is representing the Lord. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So therefore, that's why this is always used, this like a red-hot iron in contact with fire. Right? He didn't say an iron in contact with fire, because that is the process, the general. But now the position that he's talking about is red hot fire, iron in fire. So it's already like fire. So therefore, to switch to the spiritual form is not a problem.
Does it also indicate that you have to be in the fire for a little while before it kind of gets red hot?
Yeah, that's sadhana bhakti.
Yeah.
But the point is it can be also done in a moment. And there's examples. But then there's also examples of those who, like this take, a little bit of time, right? It was 4 months, going from wherever, being a 5-year-old to being a paramahamsa, like that. Others were quicker. How you say, Narottam Das Thakur, the time it took to take a bath in the Padma, different lengths of time. But they also show stories of those who take lifetimes.
Yes.
You understand? So the whole idea is that the process is not lost, and at whatever rate one can proceed at, that's what goes. So those who we see as Narad Muni, there's no real faults, right? So it's moving quicker. Bharat Maharaj was on the same platform, but he maintained a particular fault, right?
Yes.
So that one should be careful of that.
Yes.
Right? So then when he comes as Jarabharat, he just is very careful not to get involved.
Okay. Now we speak about the modern times.
The modern times.
This seems to be pretty far out to get to that stage. Bharat Maharaj had a fall, so you have to take birth. And then we hear that by Lordship Heaven's mercy, in the instantaneous, you go back to that. How to resolve that?
You've never seen like sci-fis or fantasy, so people are open to the idea. They just don't want to be told it's actually fact. You know what I'm saying? It means people, anything that they're going on is amazing anyway. It means the concept that you can actually enjoy in the material world is an amazing concept. How do you take something that's unenjoyable and then say you can enjoy it? So this concept is already there. People are already looking for that. Heaven's going to descend on earth. Does that mean when it comes down, it crushes everything that's here, and that's what makes it good? All the high rises. How does that work? It comes with its own trees. So you don't have to worry about these ones. Saying so people are already working on this. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to become a millionaire. We're going to find the love of our life. All these different things are going to happen. So, what's the problem with this? This is real. This is fact. So if you tell someone that here's something that you deal with and it's not lost, people will like that as an idea. You know what I'm saying? Because everything else you do is lost. You know, so this one lasts. And people really don't have a conception of, you know, going to heaven. You know, if you told them it's instantaneous, they'd probably be cool with that. You know, it's just not like, you know, most people don't think about, you know, trudging along on some path somewhere. Lots of stairs, you know. You know, does that make sense? So the point is, and within the modern context, you discuss, you preach, those who have an interest, those are the ones you're going to cultivate. The other ones you don't worry about. It's not our business to try to impress the gross materialists. You can't impress them. They can't impress themselves. But you can't satisfy someone who's unsatisfied. Right? Is that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the whole point. There's no way. It's just like, let's say someone's hungry. I bring lots of food. Are they satisfied?
They have to eat.
Oh, yeah. You understand? So that's the whole point, is you can show them whatever is the thing, but unless they take it, there's no question of ever satisfying. So this idea that we really have to satisfy the modern materialist, it is a fallacy. It's impossible. You can't do it. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, we work within, you know, a range that, you know, can kind of be related to. But, you know, but it's not important to do what they do, because if you do what they do, then if you really want to impress them, then who are they listening to? Okay, you know, you wear karmic clothes, you know, but then who's impressed by that? You know, the guy in the Armani suit, now that's impressive. Okay, but he just has an Armani suit, that's all? No, he has to be, you know, some big guy in a company. You know, he has to have a big, huge house. He's got millions. He's got this. He flies around. He's got his own plane. At least he flies first class. If you're not doing that, you're not going to impress the karmis. Does that make sense? So, therefore, why would we bother? It would be easier to preach to that guy, make him a devotee, and then he can impress the others in that genre. You know, it's like, you know, why should we do it? Because if that's what we're supposed to do, who's qualified? Ambarish? Do I hear a second name? No. Okay, so that's it. So he's the only one that actually could impress people in the West, according to really their standards. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. So we don't have to. We just have to be ourselves. Be satisfied, be comfortable with being ourselves. And then others are going to wonder, what has he got? Because I'm being myself and I'm not comfortable. But he's comfortable. What has he got that I don't have? That's what they're looking for. They're looking for satisfaction. They're looking for comfortable. Like that. So therefore, in the explaining, then these principles, how Prabhupada gives it, that's what's so nice about how Prabhupada explains things. They're getting down to the principles. One doesn't understand and thinks they're detailed, then one will think there's a problem. But no, it's principles. And there's no problem explaining it for the right people. But if you're worried about that, you know, particular person that has a chip on their shoulder about anything politically correct, there's nothing you can say that will satisfy them. Because whatever they say today, tomorrow they will say something else. It's guaranteed. You know, they will. So why even bother trying? You know, it's like it's a waste of time. Therefore, then we're not worried about social conventions that aren't useful in Krishna consciousness. You know, does that make sense? That doesn't mean you don't put on the same colored socks. You know, because that's you're going to put on socks anyway, so you might as well put on ones that match. You know, that's each other, and then there's the bigger step of that it matches everything else you're wearing. Right? That's the next stage.
That's only for second initiative.
Yeah, that's pretty advanced. Okay, there was one other. Well, Okay, footnote 63. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1628, the Lord previously promised, giving up this low body, you will become my associate. Srimad Bhagavatam 1623. At the time of being made to accept a body which was Shuddha Sattva, Shuddham, because it was not a material body, and because it belonged to the Lord, Bhagavatam, my material body, Pancha Bhautika, fell away. Giving up my material body and attaining a spiritual body were simultaneous, like the expression, I am walking while the cows are being milked. Right? They can go on at the same time. It's not a problem. Sridhar Swami says, it's funny. Sridhar Swami says, what is said in this verse is that the bodies of the associates of the Lord are pure, without corrupted karmas, and eternal. The Bahuvriti compound, Arabdha Karma Nirvana, means that he has destroyed the karmas like fire burning wood. But this means that the Prarabdha karmas were not destroyed just now, but previously, for that is accomplished by sadhana. Prarabdha karmas do not remain with the devotees who have developed prema bhakti. For those practicing pure bhakti, destruction of Prarabdha karmas takes place during the sadhana bhakti. It will be said in the story of Priyavrata. Right? So here's also some fine points to say, on the platform of prema, you're not working with Prarabdha karma. Right? But before that, then it's the sadhana that goes on that gets rid of that. Right?
For those practicing pure bhakti, what's the meaning of pure?
Unalloyed? Not necessarily, because he's saying associates of the Lord. So let's say in Vaikuntha, that's pure bhakti, but not pure unalloyed.
They included in that?
Yeah. No, everybody's included in that. Because when you're giving these kind of descriptions, you're describing the whole spiritual world. It's not just that. Okay. So Prarabdha means your previous. So that's why it mentioned about a taint. Right? So then here, if one is in the material body, that is Prarabdha karma. Right? So at least that much has to remain. Because otherwise, if that Prarabdha karma goes away, you won't have a body to do the devotional service in. So it's necessary. But the other aspects that create the affect the mentality and all that, that's what you're wanting to get rid of. Right? Yes.
What does it mean when it's said that somebody develops their spiritual body right at the end, they're still here, but they've attained their spiritual body?
Yeah, but that's being done through meditation.
Okay.
So then, also then, it would be still the simultaneous, because then you leave this or there. It's like you said, which is commonly called death. Means in this case here, as one is here, one hasn't cultivated the form there, and then but it's simultaneous so that one attains that form, because then all the corrupt karmas are burnt up by the sadhana, so there's nothing to create another one of these bodies, so therefore you just enter, you just, how you say, take up your natural spiritual form, right? The other ones is they're there by meditation. Means you're here in this body, you're there by meditation. So all it is just one day you don't come back. So then they call that death here. But it's just you go, you know, performing your service there, and then you come back here. And then you go and come back. So all it is you stay, you don't come back. You know what I'm saying? So basically it's the same principle. It's just the detail of whether it's been done through meditation or not. Yes.
Can you say that there is a relation between Prarabdha karma and not satisfaction, unsatisfaction?
Prarabdha karma and non-satisfaction means lack of satisfaction is due to being absorbed in karma. So when you give up karma, then you can be satisfied. So then akarma, then it's not producing any new. It doesn't mean that there won't be something from previous. But you're not producing any new, so then that's where satisfaction starts. So when one's not performing anything new, and from the past there is no no interest, you know, then there's satisfaction. Okay. Such power is not surprising from persons who have conquered the six senses by the dust from the lotus feet of the Lord. Since even an outcast becomes immediately free from bondage of karma by chanting the Lord's name once. No, I don't. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.135. Because here it says an outcast. That's even better here. Right, so it's not even tribal. Outcasts are even lower than tribals. So here we're getting. Yeah. Here is the meaning of the verse. This is not so amazing for such a type of person. What should be amazing? Even an outcast, Vidura Vigata, who chants the name of the Lord once, now, at the time of accepting the name, gives up his body, Tanvam. Right. Since we do not see anyone giving up their body simultaneously with chanting, body, quote unquote, body here means his prarabdha karmas, which are being experienced in the present body. Right? Because like Brahma, is how we see is that Brahma, when he's doing the creation, then something comes up and it creates a whole disturbance. So he says he gives up that body. It means that particular mental body. Right? Because the prarabdha karmas are traveling with the subtle body, not with the gross body. The gross body is a manifestation of prarabdha karma.
Yes.
Right. So that means on that platform is being given up. So here, then, that's the meaning, is that he takes up chanting the holy name, so the outcast is no longer an outcast, because he's an outcast by prarabdha karma. Yes. But now that he's chanting, he's no longer an outcast. Right? He becomes a devotee. Again, against Luke. Sorry.
I was thinking about the point.
Don't worry. Does that make sense? So therefore, then what is he doing? He's absorbed in chanting the holy name. So he's absorbed in Brahman. Yes. So what does that make him?
A Brahman.
You understand? Yes. By occupation, not necessarily, because that's dependent on your prarabdha karma. You understand? But by ashram, he's a Brahmin. And it's the ashram, and one may say, oh, but that's the lower form, the varna is the higher form. But if it's higher, brahmacharis, vanaprastha, sannyas don't practice vocation. And those are considered the spiritual ashrams. Right? Grihastha can be spiritualized by following in the same mode. Right? But it's not inherently. Mm-hmm. You understand? So ashram is the higher. That's why it's the spiritual, and the vocation is the social. Yes.
Wouldn't grihastha not spiritualized be grihamedi?
No, but if he's following all the Vedic rules nicely, then he's called a grihastha. So if you're comparing it to the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness, yes, he's a grihamedi, but then he's a pious one who follows all the rules of grihastha.
Yeah.
Right? So that's different from, you know, your modern context of grihamedi. You understand? It's like the spiritual. If it's about Krishna, it's pious. If it's not about Krishna, it's not pious. So it just depends upon which you're taking.
Similar to the Smarta Brahmana Naimiti.
Yes, it's just like that. Depends upon. That's why it's always important to know the context that you're discussing something at, because the word can be used on all these levels.
Yes.
And much of the time, doubt comes up because you're using it in a different context, like that. Yes.
So that on the same principle, the initiation works.
Yes. Yeah. So it happens now. Whether you have fully changed your mentality, but the whole point is the body has been changed, has been purified. You're just like, it's given the example, but like you take gold and you purify it, or take mercury and purify it. So mercury is poison, but you purify it, and that becomes a very powerful medicine. Like that. So this kind of, you know, alchemy is not actually understood in the modern context. In the Vedic context, it's understood. how it does. So it changes. So even though it appears to be the same, its functioning is totally different, because now it's about Krishna. Right? While we got the particular body we have because of not serving Krishna. Right? So we get a particular form. Does that make sense? One could say no, but let's say for devotees that they're born in devotee family, so isn't it about being a devotee? That's that they were born in devotee family, that comes from that, but what particular kind of body they have, that's from the part that wasn't devotional. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's pointing out is it's not so amazing because Krishna consciousness is so powerful, so wonderful. So this is the point. It's not so amazing. The karmis may be amazed, but for the devotees it's not amazing. Okay, body here means parupta karmas, which are being experienced in the present body. This is the opinion of some. Others say by the association of bhakti, like a touchstone, the body made of the three gunas becomes free of the gunas, as seen in the case of Dhruva. Thus, giving up the body means giving up the body made of three gunas. This will be explained later at the beginning of the rasa dance. Quote, free of bondage, those gopis abandoned the gross material bodies made of gunas. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:29-11. Right, so here again is like before when he was talking about the two different opinions. Now these different opinions are two sides of one aspect. One is showing the mechanics of it, the other is showing the devotional side of it. Because it's actually because of the devotional that it's happening by the Lord's mercy. Then these are the mechanics by which it gets done. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? You know, he cooked lunch for the Lord. Right? We don't get into discussing mechanics, it's about the devotion. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. But if you have, you know, if you're talking about the recipe, then you talk about the mechanics of it. Does this make sense? Yeah. So that way it comes out as this is the opinion of some.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So therefore, because he's chanting, he gives up that. That's that, that. But what is the effect? What's actually happening? Is what does that mean, giving up the parabdha karmas? It means the modes aren't there.
Yeah.
What will make the modes not work? Only bhakti. Because you can't have a material body and not function by the modes. Right? Because in the spiritual world, it works by sambit, sandini, and ladini. Right? The material world is a reflection of that, will be goodness, passion, ignorance. So you have to be using one or the other. So that means, as a devotee, then sambit, sandini, and ladini are actually what's doing the work. So it's not the gunas. Because gunas means it's material. Right? So when we say spiritualized, it means that the three transcendental qualities, they're running things. Does that make sense? Yes.
Sorry, I don't remember exactly what it said here, but I think I read in the Bhagavad Gita that it says you can perform devotional service and you can be passionate for it.
Yes, you can. But we're talking about pure.
Oh, okay.
Like that. You know, because on Bhagavatam, it's only talking pure. The elements of mixed devotional service, how to engage that in the Lord's service, that's already been discussed in the Gita. And so the Bhagavatam in the opening has made the point that we're not discussing that anymore. It's already been discussed. We're now only discussing pure devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. So even if there's examples of persons who are not in pure devotion, it's to point out what is the weakness that's why it's not pure. Okay? Yeah. So free of bondage, those gopis abandon the gross material bodies made of gunas. So then they are functioning under the internal potency. Otherwise, before that, though functioning with the spiritual form, then at the same time as there's the element that they're doing this or doing that or their interest in the spiritual nature. So its effect is going to be that of the material world. Does that make sense? Because you're dealing with the same person. Yogamaya and Mahamaya are one person. You see it connected to Krishna, then you're working with the internal potency. You don't see a connection with Krishna, you're dealing with the external potency. It's not about location. We take it all its location. Therefore, the material body, can function under the internal potency, or the spiritual body can function under the material, the external. You understand?
Yes.
So that's the whole point. That's tatastha. It depends on your mentality which way it goes. So that's why the example is given in the fire of spiritual. Then the tatastha is in the fire of the internal potency. But it will always be tatastha, therefore the element of iron. It's always going to be iron, but it will. You leave it in the fire eternally, it acts as fire eternally. So no one makes a distinction. Does that make sense? Yes.
So before the level of prema, does it mean that it's fire and out and fire and out?
Means generally you can say it's fire and out up to the level of bhava. Though generally your neophyte is the one where that's really quite obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, very enthusiastic and not, or very this or not, or you know, like this kind of things. Then with nishta, basically becomes practically stable, but there's still something that's not, because it's more. What was the percentage Prabhupada mentioned?
75.
Like that. So 75%. You know, so that means 25% is still not. So you one may be in and out of that, but the prominence is 75. Like that. So then that will get more, and then with ruchi, then it becomes, there's not the interest in material things, you know, dramatically goes down. And then with the sakti, then that attachment to Krishna as a person, so that's where then the spiritual element becomes very dynamic, because then that working on that Bhagavan platform becomes the prominence. Right? So that will be there. When you get into the bhava, then it's stable. Means it's stable, but you're dealing with some little bit left, because we're talking about pure unalloyed, right? So this is specifically we see in connection with Braj. Other realms that may not be so important, but in Braj, because you're going from pure to pure unalloyed, therefore those little subtlety elements have to be dealt with. So for others it wouldn't be a problem, but for us, then it would. Does that make sense? So therefore, in this, the levels of samadhi, then there's how much you're absorbed. You know, occasionally, regularly, you know, consistently, constantly, you know, it just keeps getting deeper and deeper until it's samadhi, where it's just, that's all there is. So, when it means these gopis, they came to the level of samadhi. Right? That's then when now there is no action of the modes. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if you're thinking of Krishna, then you're dealing with the internal potency. But if those moments you're not, you know, then who's going to manage that? Right? Then that would be managed by the external. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's all. So it's just a matter of being, so that's why it's saying in the fire. So it's just a matter of, you know, so nishta means it's in the fire, but it may be on the edge, you know, so you're going to push it more to the middle.
Then it burns more.
Yes. But material world burns also, but we say that that's nice, so it's just a matter of getting used to which kind of burning is good. You know what I'm saying? But others say that sometimes the Lord shows devotees, literally giving up their bodies, in order that the opinion of others not be negated. Thus, Narada, who had developed prema already, gave up his body. However, it should be understood that he had already destroyed his prarabdha karmas during his practice of bhakti. Sri Rupa Goswami explains this. So this is still all Vishwanath?
Yeah, but it's part of Vishwanath.
Oh, okay, he's quoting Sridhar Swami, and then he's giving... Okay. The Vedas declare that although meditation on impersonal Brahman cannot bring freedom from past karma, O holy name, your appearance at once makes all Prarabdha karma disappear, namastika form. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word su-samikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. Right? Because it's based on the mentality. That mentality will give you on the material platform, will give you a specific material reaction. So why that reaction? It's arranged by the Lord, because that's the reaction that is supposed to purify you and remove that mentality. Though amongst the materialists it doesn't. It just kind of shifts them a little bit, to another, material stance.
Yes.
Right? But it's originally meant for that. So the devotee who maintains some particular material mentality, then the Krishna may give a punishment that's in the form that looks like his Prarabdha karma. That's why you call it Krishna karma, because it's not Prarabdha karma. As soon as one starts chanting, there is no more previous karma. But because the previous mentality may remain, therefore the reactions that come are based on that. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes when they get, a strong reaction, sometimes there is no reaction, or very minimal reaction.
Yes.
Does that make sense? That's because it's actually with devotees, it's Krishna karma.
Yes.
Yeah.
Special mercy.
Yes, special mercy. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord, and therefore the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. So completely perfect means until he comes to the transcendental platform.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So bhava, that's given up. Right? The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. Right? So that's, yeah. This unhappiness suffered. So we're dealing with both the original idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer and the specifics of that, right? So there at the beginning stages with the spiritual form, then one simply has to be careful of that original one, not the specifics, because you're not dealing with anything material. But the idea is that I'm going to enjoy from this. Right? That has to be removed. Right? As we see, the gopis, when they went to the Rasa, even those who went to the Rasa dance, then those who thought that I'm special, then Krishna left. Because the point is this platform of transcendental intimacy has to be normal. You can't be proud of it. Because otherwise, if you're proud of it, you don't belong there. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home, back to Godhead. A sincere... 10:14. I wish that probably only went up to 13.
You mean the
That's NOD, probably NOD.
So this is from
NOD.
Oh, okay. Because he only did the tenth. I was just saying, wait a minute here.
It's a good thing he did that in NOD. It's beautiful.
Okay. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship, a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words, Daya Bak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the Supreme Pure, Lord Krishna, without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord.
Ramana Swami said, it's just like having open heart surgery without anesthesia.
Yeah. That could work. I think stubbing your toe works also. Yeah. The point is whatever degree it is, whatever is going to create that reaction. That's the element. Yeah. But here, I think his context is not about the specifics of the pain, but about the element of working on the heart. And so then you're aware of that working on the heart. You know, as opposed to
cracking the sternum.
I mean, even if it was on local anesthesia, it'd be a little freaky.
Yeah. You all right? Well.
you understand? So the context would be is that the heart is working on it, not so much, I think, pain, because you know, even a splinter in your finger causes a whole lot of distress. Like that. So it's more about that the heart is being purified and you're aware of it. While for the karmi is they're going through the effect of it, but they're not aware of it. So they just think they're suffering. So for them it's just suffering. For the devotee, it's like medicine. So medicine will be suffering. In other words, that suffering is going to be there, but it's just a matter of whether it gives you a medicinal effect or not. Does that make sense?
Okay, so 118,
verses 29 to 38. Narad Muni attains full perfection. In verses 29 to 38, Narada tells Vyas how he spent the remainder of his life. Narada then describes his next birth as the great sage, Narad Muni. Narada finishes instructions to Vyas, and Suta Goswami narrates the departure of Narada. Suta then describes Narada as glorious. Srila Vyasadeva asked the question, if you have an eternal body, then why are you known to be born from Brahma in this Swayambhuva Manvantara? It is said, Utsagan Narado. Jaye. Narada was born from the deliberation of Brahma, which is the best part of the body. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:12-23. Narada Muni answers in verses 29-30. At the end of Brahma's day, when Lord Narayana lay down in the waters of devastation, I entered into his breathing along with the grandsire and the created elements. Lord Brahma rested within the body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu during his nighttime, which lasted for 1,000 cycles of the four yugas. Thereafter, I appeared along with the other great rishis that were born as Lord Brahma's son. But unlike them, my appearance was completely spiritual. 29-30. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. Narada is known as the son of Brahma, as Lord Krishna is known as the son of Vasudeva. The personality of Godhead and his liberated devotees like Narada appear in the material world by the same process. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita, the birth and activities of the Lord are all transcendental. Therefore, according to authorized opinion, the birth of Narada as the son of Brahma is also a transcendental pastime. His appearance and disappearance are practically on the same level as that of the Lord. The Lord and his devotees are therefore simultaneously one and different,
as spiritual entities. They belong to the same category of transcendence. Since then, by the grace of Lord Vishnu, I've been traveling everywhere without restriction, both in the spiritual and material worlds. And while doing so, I constantly sing the glories of the Lord, while accompanying myself on the veena that has been given to me by Lord Krishna. As soon as I begin to chant his glories, the Lord appears on the seat of my heart as if called for, 31 to 33. In his commentary to 1631, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that unlike other sages, Narad Muni can travel everywhere. I am not like Marichi and other sages of material bodies under the influence of their own karmas, involved in karma yoga, nor like the Kumaras involved in jnana. I am above the paths of material engagement and renunciation. I worship the Lord and exist independently. This is expressed in this verse. Those who are karma yogis do not go beyond the universe. Those who have attained Brahman by very difficult austerities do not go into the material universe out of fear of the bondage of karma. But I, fixed in continuous devotion to the Lord, travel outside and inside this universe. Or, outside can mean I travel outside the universe to Vaikuntha. Thus it is said, the Kumaras are on the path of detachment, and Marichi and others are engaged in the path of material life. Only Narada is liberated. Nrsinga Purana. So the karmis can't get outside. And the jnanis won't come inside. But he's actually independent. Because the others can say, no, we're independent. But if you're independent, you should be able to go anywhere you want. So neither the karmis or the jnanis are independent. Right? But Narad Muni, being a devotee, he's transcendental. He can move anywhere.
Yes.
Because for him, it's not what you're going to gain. The karmi stays here because what he'll gain. The jnani doesn't come here for what he'll gain. Right? But the devotee, having nothing to gain, will move in both spheres. So then it works nice.
Is that what it means in Gita when it says be free from all desire for gain and safety?
Yes, but their gain and safety is in connection with one's position or identity. Mm-hmm. Because gain will be your goal. I'm doing an activity because it will give me a goal. I'll gain something. And then what I gain, that is my safety. Right, because what facilities I have, that will be my safety. So, if you're free from gain and safety, then means you're free from identifying as the controller and enjoyer. Because the controller is safety, an enjoyer is gain. Is that? Okay. Here also then we're getting here the position of devotional service that's actually transcendental is being referred to here. Because the Kumaras are on the path of detachment, Marichi and the others are engaged in the path of karma. Right? So then it's a matter of it being beyond that, right? Now, it's another thing when the Kumaras take up devotional service. Right? And that's then they're categorized in that way, like Narad Muni. But in principle, when they appear, then the Kumaras are on the path of jnana, and Marichi and the others are on the path of karma. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains the significance of the words, quote, as if called for, from 1633. Priya Shrava means that Krishna goes wherever his glories are sung, since he is attracted to that. Footnote 64. Shiva Goswami explains that the Lord is attracted not for his own glorification, but to give mercy to those devotees. Because then it's an interaction, it's a relationship, so then he goes and interacts. Because the fact is he is transcendental. And the soul is transcendental. So that interaction is actually where satisfaction lies.
At night?
Yes. It means that devotees were in prema.
Not necessarily. It just means goes wherever his glories are sung. So he'll be there in some form. But now whether he's there personally and you can see him, that's another thing.
Yes.
But even seeing him personally, one can do that, but it's still not the highest realm. Because the point is seeing him with the devotees, now that's the highest.
Yes.
Right? Tirthapada means that wherever the Lord goes becomes a holy place. The Lord actually is controlled by bhakti, and thus appears without being called. Therefore, the verse says that he comes as if being called. So he's saying, it means the problem is that he is called for. That's what he's saying, because he's not. Just wherever his name is, so that he naturally becomes attracted, so he comes on his own. That's why he says, as if called. In the next two verses, Srila Narada Muni summarizes the discussion by sharing his own realizations. My dear Vyas, thus it has been directly experienced by me that the best means for the suffering conditioned souls to cross over the ocean of nescience is to situate themselves in the boat of constant chanting of the holy name and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The restraint of the senses by the execution of yoga can give one temporary relief from materialist stress, but only by active service to the Supreme Lord can one attain real satisfaction of the soul. Footnote 65, right? So it's mechanically it's not two different things. Right? The difference is following the mechanics of controlling the senses won't give you satisfaction. Mm-hmm. But when you're engaging the senses in the Lord's service, they're being controlled.
Yes.
But that gives satisfaction because of the connection with the Lord. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it won't look any different. Does that make sense? So it's automatic. It comes automatically. You know, just like if you're invited for lunch, you know, it's automatic, you'll get a plate.
Most places.
Most places. No, but you said, you know, it means you've been invited to lunch and not got a plate?
Yeah, I mean, these cardboard things at McDonald's, you know.
But you were invited there. McDonald himself invited you. It's not...
home.
Okay. But in any case, still, they give you some variety of...
There's some thing.
Yes. But the point is it goes together. The meal goes with the plate, goes with, you know, like that. So that's the whole... that's the idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Footnote 65. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura writes in his commentary to 1635. Though it is ascertained that the state of bhakti is real liberation, yoga and jnana mixed with bhakti will not pacify the atma as much as pure bhakti. Means there's some satisfaction there. Otherwise, why are the sadhakas finding satisfaction? Right? Because bhakti is there, so it's the bhakti side that's giving the satisfaction. The mixed side, that's what's not giving satisfaction. That's what's still giving trouble. Right. Right. Atma is not pacified by yoga, yoga patai, as much as by serving Mukunda directly, adha. It is established that yoga and other processes without bhakti are futile. O Almighty Lord, right? Because that's the point. The mechanics aren't what is attracting the Lord. It's the devotion. Right. So that's the whole thing. So, why is it that you're satisfied?
The Lord is satisfied.
The Lord's satisfied. Because the attitude. It's not the mechanic. Krishna, no one's going to be more expert at anything than Krishna. Right? He's not going to be anyone better than that. He doesn't even have to do it. He only has to think about it and it happens. Right? You know, and he doesn't have to sit there like this. It just happens. You know, if he wants the spoon to bend, it bends. He doesn't have to... You know, do all that whole thing. You know? Does that make sense?
That's excellent.
Yeah. So the point is it's mechanics aren't going to attract him. What's going to attract him is that devotion, that love, that attracts him. Right? And as we said, you use the mechanics as the medium to express that affection. But so yoga process, austerities, yajna, all these different things will not give results without bhakti. But they're already contained within bhakti. Right? Bhakti means sacrifice. You're doing it for someone else's pleasure. Right? It means austerity because in all situations you are performing the service, so whatever comes up.
Yes.
Like that. Does that make sense? So they're already contained. So you don't have to separately. That's why. But it appears that it's two different things. No, it's that there's one thing, bhakti, and then you take a part of bhakti. You take the mechanics of the different mechanics of bhakti. Without the bhakti, then they become named by those parts. Yes. Right? You know, it's just like you have a hand. Yes. Right? But when it's connected to the body, it's a hand, but it's a hand that's part of the body, and it works with the body. So body comes with hand. Yes. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So they go together.
Yes.
O Almighty Lord, in the past many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. Though such devotional service, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you, O infallible one, and could easily surrender to you and achieve your supreme abode. Right? So now, many yogis in the past, so whatever the kind of yogi, they were using that particular yoga system. Right? But now, they achieved by offering all their endeavors to you. So whatever was the goal of their system, they were offering to Krishna. Right? And at the same time, carrying out faithfully their duties, so it's not whimsical, it's authorized. Through such devotional service, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting. So that's the real essential point. Is that through hearing and chanting, that's the driving force. So that devotion to the Lord and the hearing and chanting, these are the dynamic elements. Right? And then whatever yoga system they're using.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So bhakti yoga already includes them. That's what the Gita is explaining. The yoga ladder means all these are included. All the different yoga systems are in buddhi yoga. Right? So it's all consisted there. Now the point is the mentality of doing it for Krishna, the devotion. That's the real element that one's trying to accomplish. Right? It's not about the mechanics of it. Right? But there's appropriate mechanics. Right? Yeah. Even the stage of jnana without a bondage of karma is not glorious if it is devoid of bhakti to the Supreme Lord. What is the use of having destroyed ignorance? What then to speak of sakama, karma, which causes suffering? Means, what is the use of having destroyed ignorance? Means if liberation has no value, and that's destroyed ignorance, so then what about karma, which is based on ignorance? So that doesn't even, you know, it's already included. But so karma, which causes suffering both during practice and at the stage of perfection, and nishkama karma when not offered to the Lord.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So therefore, either one, sakama or nishkama, they're useless without their connection to the Lord. You know, of the two, sakama gives even more trouble. Therefore, this verse must not only refer to yoga and other processes mixed with bhakti, since they otherwise would give no results at all. And even if these processes pacify the Atma to some extent, they do not pacify to the extent that pure bhakti alone, serving Mukunda without these processes, does. These mixed processes will not satisfy the Atma completely. Okay, now here he's even pointing out that yoga means it has to be mixed. There has to be something. So the elements of chanting and other things, if they're actually bona fide authorized, they have to have that involved. But they're still not going to give satisfaction. Right? So only when it's pure. So, and then when it says when it's pure, Certainly without these processes means that it's not that you're not engaging activities, but you're not using the system of karma yoga. You're using karma as it falls naturally in bhakti. You're not using the system of jnana yoga. You're using intelligence naturally as it's used in bhakti. Right? So pure bhakti is actually going to be... Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we have... In other words, we have to switch from looking at it by... Well, what's the mechanics? What's changed? To what's the mentality? What's changed? Right? Because that's where we run into difficulty understanding the difference between bhakti and karma yoga.
Yes.
Right? Because karma yoga can be bhakti.
Yes.
So the point is, when it's bhakti, then it's that process. Because bhakti is not a different mechanics. It's the process of being always absorbed in the Lord.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Favorably.
Hmm?
Favorably.
Favorably, yes.
So we need to change our perspective.
Yes, it's, okay. The perspective changing is what's necessary. You know, just like now we look at the world and it's opportunities for sense gratification.
Yes.
But we have to change it to opportunities for serving Krishna.
Yes.
Like that. It's not that the world changes. You know, it's not when you become a pure devotee that, you know, the sun's always out, the butterflies are there, the birds are chirping, the meadows are there, rolling, you know, stuff like that.
The sun pupper is free.
Hmm?
The sun pupper is free.
The sun pupper is free, yeah. You know, there's flowers on the moors. You know, I mean, the whole thing. You know. I say, you know, Grendel chants the holy name. You know, so it doesn't adjust like that. You know, it's just you see opportunities for serving Krishna.
Yes.
Okay. You have not sufficiently described the glories of the spotless Lord Krishna, because your mind could never be satisfied with Vedanta. I think that writing the Vedanta Sutras is insufficient. Srimad Bhagavatam 158. Right, so that's the point. Until it connects to the Lord, it's not enough. Though bhakti is described, it's not that in Bhagavatam there's more technical points of philosophy that the Vedanta didn't cover. No, it's that the Vedanta is not describing the glories of the Lord. Right? It says not sufficiently. It's not that they don't mention, but it's not sufficiently. You know, it's just like if I give you one grain of rice, I can say, yeah, I fed him rice. You know? Rice.
Singular.
Yes. You know.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that would be more safe to use rice, right? Because like vegetables, it has a plural. I fed him vegetables.
Yeah.
Fruit, yes. The bhakti is described later as the means of liberation. Three types of bhakti are seen. Pure bhakti, kevala, mixed bhakti, but with bhakti being prominent, pradhanya, and mixed bhakti, but with bhakti being secondary, guna bhava. Kevala bhakti is illustrated in verses such as Srimad Bhagavatam 1517, 1523. So here, the mixed also, we're showing where the devotion is the prominence or the devotion is secondary. Right? So that would means typically, yeah. Yeah, so then that which is secondary, then the one's going to experience a lot of the, how you say, reactions of your primary consideration, means the material,
yes.
What's mixed. Right, when devotional service is prominent, then it will be reduced. It'll be very minimal. That's where you see is the suffering. There is just due to the mentalities need to be improved. Right, the other one is it is you're getting the reactions. It's not karma. It is still arranged by the Lord, but you're thinking that this activity and the results of that will give me happiness. Right.
It seems sometimes that when bhakti is secondary, devotees say that bhakti is very difficult, but it's actually not the bhakti that's difficult, it's actually the other activities
yes.
that's bringing these.
Yeah, because it's not natural for the soul. You may have been doing it a long time, so you're used to it, but it's not actually
easier. Material life is so much more difficult. At chanting, what do you have to worry about? Anything else, you have to worry about everything. Yeah. You know. Okay, so Kevala Bhakti is now in these two verses. One who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage, yet there is no danger of being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. Right, so this is interesting because he's talking about who sometimes may fall down, an immature stage. But the point is it's an immature stage of pure devotion. Right? Because we see is that the actual fully mature stage is prema. Like that. And then it's different degrees of maturity from, you know, starting from nishtha and ending at, what he said? Apandas. Right? Like that. Because then inheritance basically means prema. You move to that stage. Okay. Yes.
Why this verse is quoted in is Kevala Bhakti?
Because he's forsaken all his material engagements to engage in the devotional service to the Lord. So though fully engaged in occupation, oh no, that's the other one, right? So the point is it's just about the Lord. Okay, pure devotion means is you're doing it to please the Lord. That's all. That's your purpose. So it's not about what you're doing. It's about why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then the second verse. Oh Muni, in my past life, in the last millennium, I was born as the son of a certain maidservant, engaged in the service of Brahmanas who are following the principles of Vedanta. When they were living together during the 4 months of the rainy season, I was engaged in their personal service. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.23. Right, so this is, then he's fully engaged. So that's why he developed so quickly.
Yes.
Right? Pradanya Bhakti, and we understand that that is by the mercy of the Lord. Right? When the Vaishnavas are kind, then the Lord's mercy is there, then he could do it, yes.
Just to clarify from her questions, that means that even in Kevala Bhakti, one may sometimes fall down.
Yes, because pure devotion starts from the Madhyama platform.
Yeah.
That's the general. You can start it from the neophyte platform. This means, what that means is that one is situated in, you're stable in your Krishna consciousness, but you don't necessarily know so much philosophy. That's a third-class pure devotee. Like Kashimisha. Right? He didn't know how to defeat the Mayavadis. Right? So he's considered a third-class pure devotee. Right? But in your general is that it's from the Madhyama platform, where you're steady there. So you would know, have some knowledge of the philosophy, and you would be stable in your devotional service. Right? So that's your beginning stage, right? And then bhava is your middle stage, and then prema is your mature stage. Does that make sense? So pure devotion is the standard. So before that, then it's your developing. That's why it says it's gauna bhakti. It's not primary. It's not the mukhya, it's the guna, it's the secondary. Right? Or here guna, it's under the modes. So it's not the primary element. So when it's, you know, in other words, when one's being practical, you know, in material life, and that's the focus, then devotional service is secondary.
Yes.
When one is engaged in devotional service and at the same time, you know, taking care of all the material duties, then that becomes here the prominent, pradanya. It's just a matter of how you view it. Because you don't have to be focused on the material element to pay the mortgage. You could also be Krishna conscious and pay the mortgage. It's not that the mechanics of, you know, writing a check demand, you know, lack of Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? You know, or it's, you know, pulling down that little thing on the mailbox and putting your hand there. That just, you can't do that and remember the Lord. You know, does that make sense? Or you do it online and then you, you know, push enter. That act of pushing, the particular hand and the mudra, the finger, it just completely changes. You just can't think of Krishna, right? Which may actually be true. Most things that people send might even be Does that make sense? So it's a matter of consciousness. It's not what you're doing. Yudhishthira Maharaj is running an empire, and that's a lot more complicated than any household in the planet. You know, no matter how big it is, it doesn't matter. Even you own the whole building, still it's more. You know, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the whole thing. It's still more. You know, it's more than Buckingham Palace. It's more than any of these others. You know, we've got. You know, is that one Tito built? I think it was 1,000 rooms or something. I don't think he got to live in it.
Can't bring them all.
Yeah, what to do? So in other words, it's pointing out those, because otherwise if it said, yeah, you know, pure unalloyed, this and that, we go, yes, but these two verses is going to, so it's trying to show us pure devotion is something maybe other than what we're thinking, because we always take pure devotion on only on that platform. You know, basically our consideration is only prema, like that, because we don't really make much distinction between prema and bhava. Like that. But here, in the process of elevating yourself, you have to be able to see the differences. But at the same time, it's pure devotion, it's pure devotion. It's just whether it's mature or not. So mature means prema. Like that. Yes?
Once you told us 5 points, like pure devotee, we're talking 5 different levels. And I tried to recall them. So the Madhyama is one, is here. The pure as prema, prema bhakti, which is this. Which I'm about to go and service another. So when we refer to a guru as a pure devotee, sometimes we're talking of 3 or 4, maybe you said 5 different levels.
No, I think it was just different aspects, because someone will say, you know, the guru has to be, you know, a nitya siddha, pure devotee, you know, free from all material contamination, has to be fixed in devotional service, be an uttamadhikar. You know, they say all these different things, but they're referring to all different levels, but they don't know it. You know, because when you say liberated, that's bhava. You know, perfect, that's bhava. Like that. You know, nitya siddha, that would basically refer to prema. Like that. But then, fixed, that's a madhyama. You know, so that's the difficulty is that, and uttamadhikari, that's bhava and prema. So that maybe that's what I was referring to, like that. So the difficulty is it's not actually understood what the terms mean and what the positions are. You know, so it's nice, it's just everybody's up there. As long as they have that innocence, then it's okay. But as soon as you start bringing into the realm of duality, then you have to know the differences. You know what I'm saying? If senior devotee, everyone's advanced, everyone's a pure devotee, then fine. But as soon as you start making a distinction, then you have to know what it's based on. Otherwise, then it'll be fault finding. Is that okay? Pradhanya Bhakti is illustrated in the following. So that means the majority is pure, though there's some mix. When those engaged in karma continuously perform those activities according to the instruction of the Lord, they also chant and remember the qualities and names of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.36. Right? So according to the instructions of the Lord. So that would mean for the Lord and everything like that. So this would be your Naishkarmya. Guna Bhava Bhakti is illustrated as follows. That jnana which arises from karma, which is pleasing to the Lord because of being offered to Him, is endowed with bhakti. Right? So we catch the difference between the two? Right? Means that the one is that you're offering it to Him afterwards. So you're doing it for yourself, then it's offered. Yeah. While the other one is you're continuously performing according to the instruction of the Lord.
So in other words, the pradanya has that sannyas element, and the guna bhava has the renunciation element, right? Because why were that? Because you renounce something that you consider yours, right? But if it's not yours, then it's there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But it's still according when engaged in karma, you're engaged in the activities that you are comfortable with, right? And so therefore, it's not a problem. In, how you say, to engage your conditioning, because that's what Krishna recommends. Otherwise, why say perform your duties if it didn't, wasn't going to address the conditioning? It's just at some point it goes beyond where it's not about engaging the activities. It's in the Lord's service. It's about being engaged in the Lord's service.
Yes.
See the difference?
Yes.
It means I'm engaged in the Lord's service. What are you going to do? You're going to engage your nature, of course. Or I'm engaging my nature in the Lord's service. That's this pradanya. I'm engaging in my occupational duties I'm offering to the Lord. Right? That's the guna bhava bhakti. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's subtle. So this has been... Kevala bhakti, practiced by a person who is niskama, also called as ananya bhakti, shuddha bhakti, nirguna bhakti, uttama bhakti, and akinchana bhakti. You can throw those into the list.
Yeah.
Okay. Gives prema as a result. Right? Because these others, it's going to give a mixed result. You're moving towards prema, but you're also getting the material result that one has the interest in. Right, so that means it won't give prema. It'll bring you closer to the point where you give up that desire and then engage in kevala bhakti. Then that will get prema. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like walking to the bus. The walking to the bus isn't actually getting you to Calcutta, but it's getting you to the position where you're on the bus will get you to Calcutta. But the point is, if you don't get on the bus, so therefore, walking to the bus is counted as part of going to Calcutta.
Yes.
But technically, walking the bus is not going to Calcutta. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yeah, I was thinking about an example of Dhruva Maharaj, and he went.
Yes, like that. So he was doing it too for himself, but once seeing the Lord, then he gave that up and took up pure devotion. You know? So the yogi may use Astanga Yoga, see the Lord, and then surrender and take up bhakti. That's why it's, I don't know, in the newer Gita, the older Gita, it had this painting where it had the yogi in meditation and the devotee doing, I think, you know, some kind of service, deity worship, and then at the end they're both doing kirtan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah? You didn't see that one? The older editions.
Yes.
Okay. Pradanya bhakti, classified as karma misra bhakti, jnana misra bhakti, and yoga misra bhakti, and practiced by those who are shanta, produces rati, bhava, and liberation for some. Right? So it creates that attraction to the Lord. But it doesn't create prema. Right? Because attraction is sambandha. Right? Prema is prayojan.
Yes.
You understand? So the one will mature into the other.
Yes.
Who's it? Is this one? Yes. If one of these persons gets the association of a person with dasya bhava or other sentiments because of the predominance of bhakti, desiring dasya or other sentiments. That person will achieve prema from that dasya or other bhava with the predominance of reverential aishwarya, mood. In guna bhakti, guna bhava bhakti, bhakti does not reveal its own results and name. It is only an assistant of karma, jnana, and yoga, which cannot produce results without bhakti's presence. Bhakti, in this case, is only secondary to tashta. Bhakti misra karma, bhakti misra jnana, and bhakti misra yoga produce liberation. Thus, in this scripture, only two types of bhakti are accepted, kevala and pradani bhuta. It seems that these two levels correspond to the nirupeksha and parinishta devotees described by Srila Baladeva Vibhushan. All this Narad All this Narada instructed the Vyas, who explains in this 12th canto. So even here at the end, then we extended the definition even more, where then here the karma, because what we're describing from our study of the Gita and how Prabhupada's explaining it, karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, then Prabhupada's describing this, what do you call it? What was it? Pradanya Bhakti. Right? And as here he mentioned, what was it? As karma, pradanya, class is karma misra bhakti, jnana misra bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So this is what we're understanding. So it is dynamic in Krishna consciousness. Though if one stays within that form, that will elevate you basically to Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why we can see is that those who are in the Vaikuntha lines, the Vaikuntha schools, then they, Varnashram is basically, you can say, part of their process. Mm-hmm. Not without bhakti, but because they stay within these realms of karma, misra, jnana, misra, you know, bhakti. And that elevates them by the association of someone with that. It'll elevate them to there. So there's not really a need to not give such a prominence to Varnashram and their prescribed duties. Right? But now when we're dealing with Kevala Bhakti, as that will get one into Braja, right? Because now here Kevala Bhakti is being described as pure unalloyed. Then that will mean that aspect has to be given up. So that Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, you know, that element has to be given up. And then here, pointing out that the karma means Bhakti Misra Yoga, then is the systems that are there in place, but if they're followed properly according to parampara, they're mixed with some bhakti. Because otherwise they won't work. They can't work. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So then we've even widened it, that so we're not even talking about this. So what Bhagavatam is saying, getting rid of karma yoga, it means this level, this guna bhava bhakti. Right? Because people who are functioning in that, they'll think that they'll identify themselves as devotees,
yeah.
Right? But it's not for, they're engaging, they're using bhakti to get their material desire, right? Mm-hmm. To go to the heavenly planets, get material facility, yes. To get liberation.
Yes. Yes. Is it the difference between tyag and sannyas?
Here it's even a matter of, means you could say is the Kevala Bhakti would be, in this way would be the sannyas, and the what is it, Pradanya Bhakti is the tyag, right? The Guna Bhava Bhakti has those elements or fragrances of tyag and sannyas, but ultimately it's to get that result for themselves. So it's only practiced during the process. Right? Because you can't be successful at anything in the material world if you're attached to the results while you're performing it. You have to be functioning at some variety of renunciation while you're performing the activity. But having gained it, then you enjoy that. So that's the difference. The Guna Bhava has that opportunity. Does that make sense? Because here we're seeing, remember, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was counting when he's defining devotees or Vaishnavas, the smartas who worship Vishnu in that category. But that category of Vaishnavas won't produce any, it's not real Vaishnavas. You understand? So in other words, these three levels can accommodate the whole thing, or be more, we can apply it more within our practice. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
And yes. We can develop one of these three levels according to the quality of association we have.
Yes, because it shows by association with this. Now, if someone who's performing this pradanya bhakti comes in contact with those in the line of the higher rasas, then one will shift to there. Right? Because it's understood you're going to start on these lower levels and then move forward. Right? Because one can say, the guna bhava bhakti, how long that lasts, it can be quite short. Or it can be quite long. The person who, he likes to come to town, he likes to be around the devotees, chant, it's nice. It makes, you know, gives some happiness in his life, some peace, satisfaction. But he, after do that, he goes back to his regular life. You know what I'm saying? So there you're dealing on this lower level. It's just adding something to his already existing life. But once he gives up that for engaging those natures in the Lord's service, then it becomes the pradanya bhakti. Right? So basically what Prabhupada's recommending is this pradanya bhakti. As sadhana.
Yes.
Right? But as a goal, then kevala bhakti. Yes. Is that so?
And can we summarize that one of the reasons of the insatisfaction of Vyasadev was he was too much presenting a pradanya bhakti?
Even almost guna bhava bhakti. But pradanya bhakti is mentioned. You see that quite there. But kevala bhakti is very rarely mentioned. Right? Because there was that one verse, it was, you know, quoted from the Sringa Purana. Like that. So it means the Purana is mentioned, but you have one verse from the Sringa Purana. You know, one verse from here, one verse from there. The verses that are quoted from, you know, Mahabharata or other places, they're very few that are at the level that is recommended by Narad Muni. His point is that should be the predominance, or that should be exclusive. Like we see is that Mahabharata already explains all the mechanics. So you don't have to explain them in the Bhagavatam. So it can exclusively be about pure devotional service. Like that. Because if you want to know these other things, that you refer to Mahabharata.
Yes.
You know, but with the understanding of the application of Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm.
Like the you can't fill a ring with a piece of tin.
Yes. So then you bring it to that level, and then because that's the whole point is Mahabharata is on the transcendental platform. For those who see from the Bhagavatam point of view. But if you don't see from the Bhagavatam point of view, then it is your best of material scriptures. That's the whole. Okay. Narad Muni continued, O Vyasadeva, you are free from all sins. Thus I had explained my birth and activities for self-realization, as you asked. All this will be conducive for your personal satisfaction also. In other words, it's about his birth, all these different things. There's about the mentality he's gone through, because that's the problem. Because Vyasadeva, technically, there's no fault in the performance of his prescribed duties. So the weakness will be in the mentality. Footnote 66. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, all this refers to the appearance of Narad's bhakti, its types, growth and result, the activities of the devotee, destruction of corrupted karma, how the devotee leaves his body, and how he achieves a spiritual body free of karma. This knowledge is called secret, rahasyam, because it is not understood by those who study Vedanta. Mm-hmm. Right, so these are all the aspects that are beyond the Vedanta. After saying this, Narada took his leave, and while vibrating his veena, he departed through the sky to continue wandering at will. Sutta Goswami ends this chapter by glorifying the transcendental kirtan and preaching of Narada Muni, which he personally takes the greatest satisfaction from, and which in turn enlivens all the distressed souls of the universe. 36:38. Okay, so then we'll continue with this summary of chapter 6 on today's Monday.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Jai. 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 Jai.